Right now, it is time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David joins us on a Friday morning. We rebroadcast, David, during the week and also on Monday following our noon news. David is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief, and he has his own website, which is a terrific site, called themediabeat.us, and we'd love to welcome him in on a Friday morning. Good morning, David.
Well, it's good to be with you again, reporting in from the media capital of the world, New York City, and of course, talking as usual with Marshall Miles.
Well, we'll start off at Tiananmen Square. Tens of thousands, of course, took part in Hong Kong and the vigil in 2020. And as much as China tries to tamp down the memories of that, it still exists not only in China, not only in Hong Kong, but throughout the world.
Sure. I mean, it was a world attention-grabbing event in itself, and the anniversary every year since has been marked by important remembrances of that extraordinary effort to stand up against a autocratic, a totalitarian regime. And of course, it's a criminal offense as far as the authorities in mainland China are concerned to mark the occasion in any way. And yet, every year something happens, and there's been a regular tradition in Hong Kong, even under the terms of the One Nation, Two Systems agreement that was implemented and is now, of course, being shredded, having originally been imposed when Britain gave up control of Hong Kong in 1998. And since then, the grip of mainland on not just the economy, but even more importantly, perhaps political activity in Hong Kong has been tightening. And nonetheless, citizens of Hong Kong have been marking the occasion, and usually it takes the form of a lengthy vigil. And true to form, for people of Hong Kong who, you know, have shown extraordinary resilience, they observed that vigil again today. And what is the mainland going to do about it? Well, of course, unsurprisingly, we can imagine, and we will doubtless see further crackdowns, more arrests, and possibly, you know, more arrests and more disappearances when people don't even know what's happened to a critic of the regime who suddenly disappears. It's happened with publishers. It's happened with students. It's very much the pattern, and one has to tip one's hat again to the doughty proponents, supporters, insistent, continuing supporters of democracy in Hong Kong, whose days are clearly numbered. It's hard to be realistic and expect that they're going to win here, but they... the way that they continue, despite all the pressure against them, to protest is to be cheered, I think.
On the other hand, I noticed this news note out of Hong Kong. A parking space has reportedly sold in Hong Kong $1.3 million. Now, of course, for those that people don't realize it, Hong Kong has sections where some of the wealthiest people in the world have places, but it's just such an odd story when you hear that, and you realize why the Chinese covet Hong Kong so much, because of the money.
Yes, you can see. Absolutely. Hong Kong is the old Latin tag of sui generis, entirely on its own. It's a unique piece of real estate in the world, if I may use that term in in this context, even suggesting, you know, a context that suggests that even with you know, great pressure for democracy, there is a sense of great privilege available to people with lots of money in Hong Kong, and the parking space example is one extreme instance of that. Yes, you can see why this economic gem in the Far East is something that the mainland Communist Party controlled China is not going to get let go of, and not in the slightest, I think, is probably the most reliable prediction we can make.
All right, I want to move from Hong Kong and China to Israel, where you hate to say it before it happens, but it looks like the end for Bibi and his consolidation of power in Israel.
Benjamin Netanyahu is possibly, and I underline the word possibly, as right. You were underlying the notion as well, possibly on his way out after, you know, over a decade, 12 years now, of pretty well unchallenged occupation of a top position as prime minister. He's been challenged quite regularly, but he has always previously managed to squeak out of whatever challenges may be coming his way. But even now, charged with corruption and a trial going ahead, he's fighting back. Of course he's fighting back. He's Bibi. That's what he does. And many times over, he has escaped threatening situations. But somehow it looks like the balance may, and, you know, every journalist has to be careful with this story, he may be trapped. His rivals may have got him. And, of course, the rivals have been, you know, resorting to all sorts of, not exactly trickery, but switches of position that would baffle politicians in many other situations. But you have the extremely unusual circumstance of far-right parties, far-right Jewish, Orthodox Jewish parties, some very, very extreme. Centrist parties, in fact, a centrist party is at the center, as it should be, I guess, of attempting to find a solution here. They are doing the brokering. And even included in the number of parties who will get together to rob Netanyahu of any majority in the Knesset, which qualifies him to be which is one a requirement for being a prime minister who can hold on to the position. Amongst those parties in the Knesset who are joining this anti-Netanyahu alliance are Islamic jihadists. So that's an extraordinary spread of opponents and people who, if they do get into government, are not likely to be a very solid phalanx of authority. So we may be in for a rocky ride, but we may be going through that rocky ride without Benjamin Netanyahu as the Prime Minister of Israel anymore, which is an extraordinary concept to say out loud. But again, you know, as you were careful to point out, it's not over yet. And of course, Netanyahu is resorting to all the tactics that you might expect. Many comparisons have been made in the last week by journalists between Netanyahu and Trump, and it's certainly true that the base of both men, of each man, can be an ugly thing to see in operation. And one of the tactics being resorted to now is the publication of Netanyahu's opponents' home addresses, and supporters of Netanyahu turning up and outside those homes and making really threatening presence felt. And the pressure is just mounting, and Netanyahu will not go quietly.
No, so don't bent the ranch, even though it looks that way. Well, I want to stay with politics and come back to the United States. Yesterday, Mike Pence said something very, very telling. Quote, "I don't know if we'll ever see eye to eye on January 6th, end quote. That is Mike Pence on Donald Trump's stance on what happened at the Capitol.
Yeah, I imagine they won't see eye to eye. If one believes that he was under threat, as indeed he was, the noose was hanging outside symbolically, and perhaps more than symbolically, and cries of "Hang Pence" were in the air during the riot that occupied the Capitol on January 6th. He is obviously going to have one view of what was happening then, and then there is our former president still claiming not only that that he was robbed of an election victory, but that this this event was somehow a harmless expression of public support for him, and no more than that. Not an insurrection, not a violent incursion into the hallowed home of democracy for this nation. And I guess those two people, if that's the attitude they take, are unlikely to be reconciled. And of course, it gets to the heart of the question that must preoccupy every observer of American politics at the moment: is, you know, what has happened to the GOP, the grand old party? Is the Republican Party, in any sense, the Republican Party that we knew before Trump, or is it now a completely different animal? much in the way of evidence suggests that it is a very different animal. Though we must be careful in all of this not to count people out on one side of an argument simply because they're drowned out vocally much of the time. And of course, the traditionalists, if we can call them that, are on the run. Liz Cheney pushed out of her third in line in the Republican leadership in the House of Representatives, and replaced with an ardent Trump supporter. Those are the signs that suggest that Trump is unchallenged, but that may not be the case. I think we ought to express as much caution when we look at American politics as when we look at Israeli politics. Don't predict a conclusion yet, but at the moment it's undeniable that Trump has a very strong grip.
You know, we hear all the news stories about Donald Trump, but you have to explain to me, David, and I've seen a little press coverage on this, but not enough, Michael Flynn's call for a coup, which is on videotape. What really surprises me, and what I didn't know, is he still receives $100,000 a year from the United States military as retirement pay, and he's still a general, and I don't know how in today's world the Army or the Joint Chiefs don't get together and fire this guy and hold him into some sort of legal bind. Here's a former general of the United States of America, a man in very high power, and he calls for a coup d'etat, basically, and it's right there on video. The man should be arrested I don't know what you would call it, but
it's arguable that it has the smack of what the word is thrown around a lot in relation to the January 6th incursion of the Capitol. The word sedition comes up inevitably. Now, whether there's a legal case for that is a matter for more expert interpreters than myself. But yes, it's so strange that a retired general can be preaching the notion of a military coup and somehow or other still remain in possession of a military pension from the federal authorities. It is rather mind-boggling, you're quite right.
I just don't understand it. And the Pentagon has said they're not going to investigate any further. So it's like it's a done deal. But then we'll go to the amazing Manchin, Joe Manchin. He is putting himself right now front and center, and sooner or later, he will be a man without a party, or he'll be forced to run as a Republican, because it used to be just the progressives that were upset with him, but now the liberal wing and even the moderate wing of the Democratic Party is starting to get very tired of the way he's flexing his muscles.
Sure. Well, he's one single individual, but when you have a 50-50 split in the Senate, then of course he has a kind of superpower. And he doesn't rule the roost by any means, but he has exaggerated power. That's undeniable. The position that he's in is evocative in some ways of one of his predecessors, Robert Byrd, Democratic senator for an extraordinary length of time, 51 years, I think, representing West Virginia, as Manchin does. A man who, had a checkered past, to put it kindly, but in the end came through as a man who supported the role of the Senate as the deliberative body in a way the brake pads on unruliness amongst our rulers. And Manchin should maybe think about the history of his own state, which he represents in its senatorial representation. He has an opportunity here to certainly influence the way things go for the nation as a whole. And it seems like it may be in danger of going to his head. With some reflection might be called for, and a recall of his notable predecessor. And if he wants to exert a kind of regulatory or a regulating pressure on the party that he is nominally still at least a member of, then he has to tread carefully. But he certainly has some power to limit what he obviously thinks of as over extreme action by the party leadership at the moment. He's certainly at odds in many ways with President Biden, but Biden's no fool either, and he has the capacity to box Manchin in. How it goes from now on is hard to predict, like many of the things we've been talking about this morning. But one of the things that is clear is that he's managing to alienate, as you say, more and more people on his own side of the aisle, and that way lies a certain amount of danger for him, and he's bound to take that into his calculations too.
And, we live in a really strange world. Elon Musk yesterday just put out a meme making fun of Bitcoin. And once again, a meme from Elon Musk has caused Bitcoin for a dramatic drop. What is it with the cyber currency? I mean,
the immediate reaction I have is that Elon Musk and Bitcoin kind of deserve each other. I'm not sure that's a fair thing to say, but the currency of exchange in ransomware is what Bitcoin is probably most famous for at the moment, inevitably it stirs strong feelings and through a huge tranche of our society. People A, don't understand what it is, and B, associated only with murky dealings. So it's hard to see that anything but a good solid bullseye hit would be scored by anybody, but especially perhaps Elon Musk, if they want to make it a target for disparagement, comic or not.
And for one other great example of of the former guy and the new guy. Jill Biden is celebrating her 70th birthday, and they are spending it at a beach house that Joe Biden purchased for her for a birthday gift when he left the White being vice president and signed a multi-million-dollar book deal. But here's what is amazing. First of all, Jill Biden doesn't look 70. Not that 70, looking 70 is wrong. She just doesn't look 70. But you realize she's the oldest sitting first lady in the history of the United States?
Well, we're all getting older. And it was inevitable that we'd have an older person in the White House at some point. In the position of commander in chief, but the consort and first lady. I'm always a little uncomfortable with first lady as a phrase, but I'm sure many first ladies have been too. But yeah, she's a singular figure, I don't know. I wouldn't want to hazard a guess at what age she looks, but she's certainly a vital presence, and I'm glad she's getting a nice celebration with her husband. I hope it's a quiet one. I think it's part of the reassurance quotient which that couple brings to bear on their position now that this kind of celebration is happening. In these terms are all relative when you're in a position like that, and the number of people who would want to come to your party is probably considerable, it'll be a relatively quiet celebration, and as you say again, a demonstration of contrast with the storm and drang of the previous administration. There is something reassuringly grandparentish about the pair of them being there, and I think a lot of people in the country see them that way. And every time now when Joe Biden himself makes a statement, I am sort of struck by this tone that he's striking now of being a reassuring grandparent, right down to the little jokes, sometimes not very good jokes, that he'll indulge in, and the conversational, chirpy, chatty, fireside kind of feeling that he'll adopt when talking about, for instance, the National Month of Action. Sounds like a really serious matter in the pushing forward of vaccine to get the national target met by July 4th, and of course he'll neatly attach that too, as he does, to the celebratory notion of July 4th and summer and all the good things about summer that he can embrace as he cheers us on towards this high number, the high number that they're aiming for vaccinations. But he'll call it seriously a month of action, but also hang on to the various incentives that different bodies who have joined and responded to his call for action in the private sector as well as the public sector, and introducing all sorts of incentives for people to take the vaccine, and so Biden himself, Grandfather Biden, can say, "Get a shot, have a beer," because of course free beer is on the menu for people who get vaccines under certain organizations' auspices. So, though he didn't say this, of course, Manchin's constituency of the great state of West Virginia is offering free guns as part of a lottery prize for people who go in for taking the vaccine too. So there is something homely about the couple now in residence at the White House, and it seems to be working for many people.
I think what Joe Biden brought back to the White House is the same thing, even though there were a lot of people that didn't like him. It was George Bush, Bill Clinton. I can just go down the whole list. Is that the blood pressure of the country is so much lower because those presidents did not get out there and tweet and have a comment on everything four or five times a day for 4 full years. And I really think that's where the country benefits, where the presidency, whether you like a president whose politics are in office or not, the presidency has been restored to a form of some dignity and some control.
Yeah, and it's that in itself wouldn't be the only thing that's operating, of course, and it's not. I mean, and indeed, you know, Clinton was not exactly a depressant for many people's blood pressure. Yeah. People could get very, very angry about Clinton, if you remember. But it's certainly true that times have changed. Some processes, at least, have been set in reverse. Rule by Twitter, for instance, would not have been possible in any other administration except Trump. To get rid of that high-pressure form of almost idiotic, puerile form of public communication has been all to the good. And it's remarkable, I think, that that we now don't even look to Twitter, especially for official announcements from anybody. They'll be made, and Twitter will dutifully, you know, is dutifully used by many people in authority. But it doesn't have that sort of instant claim on our attention now, when it's no longer the commander in chief who dominates its bandwidth, and that can only be, I think, overall for the good.
Well, we'll meet again next Friday, not on Twitter, but live.
Absolutely not on Twitter. Although you will find me there at David Tereshchuk, but that's not where we conduct our main business, is it?
All right. Have a great weekend, David. We'll speak to you next week.
You too.
David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. You'll find him at themediabeat.us.